It's not so much from what dreams are made, but what is made from dreams. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. I am Krissa Hewitt, and Issues and Ideas continues now with Ears on Art, a twice-monthly program produced here at the studios of KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. My co-host Stephen DeLuque and I focus on the visual arts. This week and next, we are talking with Philip Carey. As we have discovered more than once in our interviews over the years, creative people often choose to work in a variety of materials and disciplines. Philip Carey is certainly such a person. He is a professional singer. He loves to work in his garden, planting cacti and succulents, native grasses, and building an environment that makes it really a pleasure to walk or sit and just contemplate what is out there. In the world of visual art, he does some sculpture, and a large portion of his activities these days is documentation of his dreams. I don't know about the rest of you, but when I have a good one, I often wake up with a sense that something nice or interesting happened, but I can't usually remember it. Well, Philip remembers, and then he draws. And as you will hear, the drawings are quite small. They are very detailed, whimsical, and colorful, and just a joy to behold. But that's not all. Philip loves to collect things, and next week, in the second half of the interview, we'll let you know about some of his collections and what he's done with them. For now, join Stephen DeLuque and me as we meet up with Philip Carey at his garden, home, studio in Morro Bay. Good afternoon, Philip. We're so glad to be here.
I'm glad to be here, too.
And the other person that's here, of course, is Stephen.
Good afternoon.
And we also have Bandit, who's scratching away in the corner. Reminds me of home. Philip, where does all of this begin? We're sitting in your living room, and there's just such a fascinating array of displays and color, and when we started when we got here of being able to walk through this rather incredible garden that's succulents and a lot of cacti. Did you start creating at an early age?
Yes. I never can keep my brain focused on what I'm supposed to, and my hands are always doing something else, like doodling and drawing and getting into trouble. I think I inherited my mom's creativity and also her bum kidneys. So I go to dialysis. About a year and a half ago, I reconnected with a woman from who I used to sing with about 40 years ago. And now every day at dialysis, which is 3 days a week, I draw something on an envelope and I send it to her. And I try to challenge the post office to actually find the address and deliver it. So far, I think as of yesterday, she told me that she had about 225 envelopes that I've done in the last year and a half or so. I really have fun doing them. And some of them I decided when I was doing an art exhibit at the San Luis Obispo Art Museum that I would make color Xeroxes of these envelopes and sign them and number them and sell them as little mini limited editions. So I do edition of 20, sell them at the museum and at Coalesce Bookstore, at Olive Tree Fine Arts in Atascadero, and at Deer Run Art and Artifacts in Cambria.
So mostly it's been drawing?
Yes. I really love any art form. When I talk to people who aren't sure about what they want to do with their lives, I was kind of in that same point. There were lots of things that I thought might be possible, but I never really started focusing until I got into college. I had sung as a boy chorister with an Episcopal church, and I had done lots of solo work and that kind of thing, and I really enjoyed it. But when I got into college and started studying music, I realized I love singing, but I hate studying music. So I switched over to graphic design, which seemed like it would be something good. And after a couple of years of doing graphic design and getting D's in my major subject, primarily because the professor and I did not see eye to eye on anything, I took my first exhibit design class, and this was at Long Beach State College, now CSU Long Beach. And this class in exhibits just opened up my whole world. And the first exhibit that I designed and built a model of, the instructor said, "This is the best thing that anybody's ever done in one of my first year classes." And so I thought, aha, this is a professor I need to work with. Within about a year, I said, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And luckily, the college had three galleries, and I got the job as the assistant gallery director, even though I was a senior at the college. And then I did a little bit of graduate work, and then I took off time to sing with a professional singing group that I had been singing with during college off and on. And we toured around the world and we made recordings. And anyway, Uncle Sam caught up with me saying, "Wait a minute, you're not in college right now. So we're going to send you a draft notice." So I went in and I passed with flying colors, of course. They said, "You've probably got about a month before you're going to get your draft notice." So I went out to the Naval Air Station, and they had a program where if I joined the Naval Reserve for 2 years active duty and 2 years of meetings, they would defer me as long as I was a full-time college student. So I immediately got back into college and took another couple of years of classes. It was fun because I was working in the gallery. I was getting a small salary plus some credit for my work. And I also learned there really a work ethic. What it took to get something done that you really wanted to do and the way you wanted it to come out. If you had to stay up for 48 hours straight, that's what you had to do. And I had never done anything like that before, and it was really, I think, beneficial to the rest of my career. Not only did I learn how to actually build exhibits and design exhibits and install them, but how to actually work and organize my time and get work done. That was very important to me to learn that, and it only took me, you know, like 3.5 years of college to decide what it was I wanted to do and why I was there.
Well, I can really identify with that one because I was perhaps almost simultaneously at Cal State Northridge, then San Fernando Valley State College, and also took an exhibit design class and fell in love with it as well. So really understand why that would catch hold. What types of things for you were particularly engaging about that process?
I love designing in three dimensions. And I do some three-dimensional artwork, sculpture, and cut paper things. There's something about the three-dimensional aspect of it that is just adds something to it for me. But also doing things for the public. And working with curators and historians, scientists, writers, other artists, getting their ideas and their concepts and trying to formulate how we can show their ideas or their work to the public, and it'll make sense to them and it'll excite them. And they're going to walk out of that gallery and never think the same about that subject again, because we told them the right way. We showed them the right way. And that's always been very satisfying. And I've probably done, I can't imagine it, but I've probably done 1,000 exhibits in my career of 40 years of doing exhibits. And that's everywhere from a $10 exhibit to a $1.5 million exhibit. And all the different kinds of places where those things happen. Formal art galleries, history museums, state park, visitor centers, street corners, sides of buildings, you know, that kind of thing. So what's interesting is that those stacks of slides on the table there, I'm putting together a slide presentation for the gallery program at Cuesta College next week. It's lucky that I took pictures of all of these exhibits, because going through those from a box up in the attic, a lot of them I had totally forgotten about until I saw the slide. Some of them are, this is the way you should do an exhibit, or some of them are, don't ever do an exhibit like this, you know. And then hopefully they'll ask me why, and we'll get into that that aspect of it.
You're listening to Ears on Art. Stephen and I continue now with our guest, Philip Carey, who fills us in on the next stage of his really interesting life and career.
I was actually singing with the Greg Smith Singers on a European tour in October of 1967, and I got back and called my wife when we got back to New York, and she said, there's this envelope here from the Navy. And I knew what it was, because they had finally given me my active duty orders. So I flew back to Long Beach, and within a month I was in Vietnam. Anyway, spent 2 years tooling around the Pacific on an old beat-up destroyer escort, and I worked in the ship's office. So I started making doodles and little drawings and things, and the captain saw one of them one day and said, hey, why don't you do some artwork for this? We were going to have, when we got back into port, they were going to have some social event. And so anyway, the next couple of years, and I actually got a framed certificate that says, Philip Carey, USNR, Ships Design Yeoman. And the captain made up this title.
I think that's the only one in the Navy.
Probably right. Yeah. But what was interesting was we had this very small squadron of like 8 ships that had very little wartime capability at all. But we had a mission that we were supposed to do. And our home port was in Hawaii, in Pearl Harbor. When we were in port, there was a big competition between the executive officers for their social events. And so I started making these invitations to send to other officers on these other ships. And the more flowery and the more silly they were, the better. They ended up, it kept me sane for part of the time. So when we were in a combat zone, the postage was free. So every day I sent probably 6 or 8 letters to people around the world for free, which was good. It was a good benefit. And I was also in charge of the mimeograph machine. So I printed up these envelopes with my wife's address and free up in the corner. And all I had to do was stick something in it and put it in the mailbox. So it worked fine.
I'm delighted with the use of terms such as mimeograph and slide trays.
Yes,
and
uh-huh.
I mean, we can be in some other distant land, unfortunately.
And time.
When they asked me about doing the class at Cuesta, I thought, well, I have slides. All I need to do is go into the dungeon and find a slide projector. And in fact, right in their art room, they had a slide projector and slide trays. So I was thinking it would be something that the students would never have seen before. So we'll see. Some of them may have never seen a slide projector before. So
it's a possibility.
You mean it's not a PowerPoint presentation?
I asked the professor if he had a budget for me to have them digitized. And he said, why don't you just show the slides?
So, so they're books, they're postcards, just some straight out drawings and even paintings, or is it all pencil drawing?
Well, if someone asks me, I say my art form is really designing my dreams, drawing them on post-it notes, 3x5 post-it notes. And I have very vivid dreams. And luckily, I remember a lot of them. So I do that almost every morning. I get up about 6. The first thing I do in a day is try to do some artwork before I get involved in other things. The dream drawings, I enjoy. I don't give any credibility to dream analysis whatsoever. I've read some of it. People make comments to me. And I don't really care. I celebrate the dream for what it is. There's something back in my brain that has collected this material and it's put it out in some strange form. And there are people in my dreams who I haven't thought about consciously for 30 years. Yet there they are. They're doing something in my dream. And sometimes it's scary and usually it's fun and funny. So. And rarely do I dream about things that are actually happening right now. Every once in a while, like my friend Linda, who I reconnected with, I think about a week after we talked the first time on the telephone, I had a dream about her. But I don't know. And I think in the last couple of years, I've had a couple of dreams about my old friend Steve Martin, who I actually saw last summer. He came here and we had a barbecue before his concert at the PAC. But I've had a couple of really great and strange dreams about him. They're framed and they're sitting in a box back there waiting for me to get them mailed to him. So, and once I get about 150 new dreams done, I print them in a little book.
Okay, so we have one of those in front of us. Stephen, you want to read off the title of this?
The Monsignor has arrived for my barbecue, but gophers have eaten all the crackers. 178 Other Strange Dreams of Philip Carey. The thing I love about your artwork is, of course, it's narrative. There's an awful lot of writing, but incredibly detailed, intricate little drawings that go along with them. Are these literal translations of your dreams? I mean, are these like images taken from the dream that you put down?
When I have a dream, when I wake up and I remember a dream, I write it down in my journal. And I will put down the important parts of it. Not only the story, who's in it, but important colors that are in the dream, like the landscape, if there are specific objects or whatever, I'll sketch a little sketch of it, because if I wait 5 minutes, it'll be gone. I won't even remember it unless I either think through the whole thing or write it down. And the easiest way is just to wake up, write it down, and then if I go back to sleep, there it is, you know. And every once in a while, in fact, I think there's a couple of dreams in there where I say, this is what appeared on the notepad when I woke up in the morning, but I have no idea what it means. And You know, I think when I was sort of awake and writing it down, I thought it made sense, but it didn't. So,
are there sometimes multiple dreams in the night? Are you up
Yes.
and down and up and down and up and down?
Actually, the last time that happened, I had three dreams, and I woke up at about 6 a.m. and I remembered all three of them, which is very unusual. But yes, sometimes if it's good enough, and if it's midnight and I'm laughing, I figure I better write this down because it might be good. Who knows? And the other fun thing is the fact that whoever shows up in a dream gets a copy of the book. And if the dream doesn't sell at one of the galleries, you know, like in the first 6 months, then I send them the dream also. So, and what's interesting is...
So you hope that you star in a dream that just somehow doesn't fit everybody else's sense of whimsy or whatever, so that eventually it becomes your own.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So it is strange how I've probably framed and sold maybe at least 150 or 200 dream drawings, and there doesn't seem to be any sense to why somebody would want that dream drawing, you know. But then sometimes when I am in a gallery and somebody is purchasing something, they say, well, I like this because my grandmother used to live in Naples down near Long Beach, and I had this dream that I was driving. This is me talking. I had a dream, and I'm driving over this bridge to Grandma's house, and here is the island of Naples down there. It's south of Long Beach. And my thought is, I look down into this little neighborhood, and I'm thinking, I wonder why Grandma never told me that was the red light district. And somebody wanted that drawing for some reason. I think their grandmother used to live there. So anyway, I enjoy working on those kinds of things. And if it works out, inner traumas or hopes and dreams or whatever, that's fine.
Boy, better luck to all of us. You talked about the fact that you put these down on rather small Post-its initially, but the size of most of these drawings?
Is 3 inches by 5 inches.
Okay.
And the reason for that is that every once in a while, I think, I'm going to do this on a larger format. I have done some 12 by 12 three-dimensional dreams, but it takes me, you know, almost a week to do something like that. Whereas the 3x5 keeps me concise. It's small. I've got to figure out getting all of the parts of the dream onto this very small space, but I can finish it in a couple of hours. And of course, the borders are important to me also. I like decorative borders. It's just something about my brain. So almost everything I do has some kind of a wild border on it. In fact, this new postcard of Morro Bay, there's more border than there is illustration. So,
well, and speaking of borders, one of the reasons why we're talking to you at this particular point is that you were the artist who designed the cover and some other interior bits here and there for the current Open Studios catalog for Arts Obispo. That event comes up the second and third weekends in October, and we'll give you more details about that later. I think that the intricacy, and Stephen, you were making reference to that, of these drawings, I can see why you'd want to keep the scale kind of small so that you could, in fact, finish something.
They're incredibly involved and detailed. So, yeah, you couldn't do a whole bunch of that, you know, and stay sane.
I keep wishing I had more mornings to do that. Multiple mornings in a day before the rest of the day kind of catches up with me and I have other things I have to do. So the cover of the Open Studios tour catalog. I think it's 8.5 by 11, and it took me about a week to do. So very detailed. But since that's kind of my style, it's what I like. I went through last year's catalog. I made a list of all of the tools, all of the styles, all of the sort of genre of artwork that was in there. And I tried to show some of everything on the cover. And it's sort of muted. It's, you know, it has a nice color over the top of it. And then Kara Suzuki, the graphic designer, asked me to do some lettering also, which she then used throughout the rest of the catalog. It was fun. I enjoyed doing it.
A cowboy artist is painting in my laundry room. His big paintings are pretty good. But then I noticed he started on a paint-by-number clown.
That was Philip Carey singing a song from a video that's on YouTube. You can find it with a Google search of Philip Carey, C-A-R-E-Y, artist. The video depicts four or five of his dreams, animated by him, of course, with original music written by his friends. This year's Open Studio Art Tour takes place October 13th and 14th, and the following weekend, the 20th and 21st, from 10 until 5 each day. The presenter of this event is Arts Obispo, and they can be reached at 544-9251 or on their website, artsobispo.org. That's one word, ARTSOBISPO. If you go online or contact the office, you can get all the information about where to find the free catalogs or how to download it, or even about the addition this year of an app. If it's more fun to just come to a party, we hope that you'll come to the kickoff this Friday from 5:30 to 8. It takes place upstairs on the terrace of the Court Street shopping complex. That's between Monterey and Higuera, bordered by Court Street and Osos. There are over 230 artists participating this year, and the vast majority will be open both weekends. You don't have to divide between North County and South County anymore. This is one of the largest art tours in the country, and well worth taking a day or several, carpooling around, and having a really good time meeting the artists and seeing their work. I am Krissa Hewitt, and you have been listening to Ears on Art here on KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. Stephen and I will be back next week with part two of our interview with Philip Carey. Thank you so much for listening.